Hey, it's Mike McEntee here on AM 950. You've been wondering all day, where's the snow? You know, I heard Matt complaining. You know, his kids, and I'm sure a lot of parents had their kids stay home today, and you know, there's no snow. There's no snow coming down. Why is it such a big deal? Look outside right now. You'll see why it's a big deal. Maybe the timing was a little bit off, but it kind of depends on where you are on the metro right now. But it is coming down. It's going to be coming down 1 to 2 inches an hour. We're looking at 5 to 9 inches total. This is messy stuff. It's March in Minnesota. Hey, it's what we live for, isn't it? We are going to talk about a political storm, though, right now. Well, there's a lot of political storms brewing in Washington, D.C., but we're going to talk about the first one here, which is about Sam Nunberg, a one-time Trump campaign aide who has said the Mueller and Russia investigation was not a waste of time, suddenly changed his tune today and just kind of went, I guess it's nuts on the air. When he was questioned about it, because he's been subpoenaed suddenly to be involved in all of this. Joining me to talk about this is Tim Mayer from Talk Media News about this and the other topics of going on in Washington. Hi, Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing great. You guys are having the storm there, but we're having, basically, it's getting extremely hot right out here with the grand jury and Sam Nunberg's topic of discussion today in Washington. Some of your listeners might have caught the freewheeling interview, but he's making the rounds right now on cable television. And he's all over the place, Mike. This is an aide that was fired. He worked on the campaign, was fired for inappropriate social media aspects. He hates Donald Trump. He really can't stand him. He says Donald Trump treated him terrible. He says he's not going to testify. He was subpoenaed. He's not going to honor the grand jury. And he's boasting about it. He's taken a lot of he's a very proudful man. He says, I'm like the first person to basically defy Mueller. What he said basically during the interviews is he said that he didn't want to testify. First, he says he doesn't want to testify till the post because he didn't want to take the trip. He's from New York. It's a short train ride to D.C. So he didn't want to take the time or the trip. And now he's basically saying that he doesn't want to be basically a pawn in Mueller's investigation. In some aspects during the interview, he defends Donald Trump. He defends that Donald Trump turned down prostitutes in Russia. He defends Donald Trump saying now there's no collusion. If you recall, just a short while ago, a few weeks ago, I think it was, where he suggested that there might be something there with Donald Trump during the campaign.
Well, I think even today he was saying that there might be something there, but he didn't want to elaborate what it was. So there's a lot going on here. I want to jump back to the emails, because that's what they're asking about. They're asking about emails from President Trump, Hope Hicks, Corey Lewandowski, Steve Bannon, and Roger Stone, who was Nunberg's mentor and a longtime confidant of Trump. They want to know what's in these emails. He says he's not going to turn them over because it's going to spend him too long to go through them. I mean, has he ever heard of the search function in his email box? I mean, that seems like a pretty flimsy excuse.
I would suggest that, he did answer FBI questions for about 5.5 hours. I would probably think that the FBI and other intelligence agencies actually have some of his emails. And, when you're being questioned in the grand jury, and if they, catch you in any particular lie, which on anything, they're going to charge you with, perjury or lying to the FBI and anything. So I would think they have some of the FBI's, but some of his emails. But you're right. It's a very easy thing to do to go collect your emails, but he doesn't want to do it. He says that Mueller thinks he has a Manchurian candidate. And he doesn't want to take part in this at all. So this will be interesting. He's supposed to testify on Friday. So whether he's trying to get his 15 seconds right now, all over the place, and he changes his mind after he talks to his lawyers. But it's interesting, Mike, he's gone on television and without any attorneys. And he told the Washington Post he didn't want to pay for an attorney. Doesn't want to have an attorney. He's representing himself.
Now we look at who Mueller wants to hear from these emails. And again, you mentioned that it may not be that the content of the emails is what they're after. They're just trying to see if Nunberg is lying here. But we're talking about Trump, Lewandowski, Bannon. I mean, this is the inner circle. What does that tell us about where this investigation is going?
It's getting closer and closer to the inner circle. I mean, the investigation is far from over. I mean, it could drag on for several more months or even more years, but it's getting closer and closer to like key people right now. And so, the question is, does it go all the way up to the channel out to Donald Trump? Now, Lundberg said basically he hadn't had conversations with the president on a lot of things. He said he thought the grand jury was going to be questioning about the Miss Universe, Donald Trump's role in Miss Universe and with the Russians, with Putin, if Putin was there, if he wasn't there, and so forth. And that's what's, that's what he said. But again, he was all over the place. If your listeners get a chance, you can just watch the CNN interview. You can also watch an MSNBC interview that he did previously, and he just contradicts himself consistently. I can't tell you, honestly, part of me, after I watched it, Mike, I thought, well, he doesn't want to testify because his testimony, in some ways, might help Donald Trump. Because he said a couple times that, he didn't think there was collusion. Then he said, well, there might be something, but he has no evidence to support it. He didn't believe that he was a Manchurian candidate. Donald Trump was a Manchurian candidate. So, who knows where he's at, but I think he would be an unreliable witness in this particular case based on the statements that he said and the things that he said, which is all over the place.
And, this is a special prosecutor. This is a grand jury. And to be just so cavalier as saying, well, I'm just going to rip up the subpoena and not show up, I don't really care. I mean,
actually, he's ripping it up on Bloomberg television.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Well, he said that's what he's going to do. So that'll be an interesting, type of moment where, such as when Geraldo opened up the safe, I guess, when everybody's going to tune in and watch him rip up a grand jury subpoena.
But I think the only way that he could not testify is if he claimed the Fifth Amendment on this whole thing.
He still would have to show up.
Yeah, he would. He absolutely would.
He's facing contempt. He's facing multiple, probably other charges for failure to show up to a subpoena. And he doesn't care. He says, arrest me, put me in jail.
You got to admit, it's never a dull moment. That's for sure.
The telling point is when CNN, he turns to the interviewer and says, have you ever heard anybody doing this? So he's kind of proud of the fact that he's the first one to do this, actually, the Mueller investigation. I'm sure in history there's other people that said, I'm not testifying, period.
The other political storm that is brewing in Washington was kind of set off on late last week when Donald Trump announced that he was going to possibly impose tariffs on aluminum and steel. And since then, I don't know. It hasn't been walked back, but it's certainly run into a lot of opposition, by at least from the Republicans. What's going on here?
Well, Paul Ryan has come out strongly against it, and the Republican Party has come out strongly against it. And it's interesting. We're looking at a 25% tariff on steel, 10% on aluminum, and some of these are, our allies, such as Canada, and Germany, and other places. And he really wanted to go after China. And so the interesting aspect is now there's talk about there might be some exceptions to the tariff in which countries won't have to face that tariff. And there's also questions about he's put out a little olive tree stating if they, redo NAFTA, that they will, that he might walk back these tariffs. But right now, it's interesting to see right now because you have Democrats and you have unions supporting this because, steel basically has, manufacturing jobs dealing with steel in the United States have pretty much gone. And so the unions are supporting this. It's another incident. If you remember just a few weeks ago when we were talking about, gun control, and he basically took the Democratic point of view on guns, and he's done this again. Now, you know, Donald Trump has been a Democrat most of his adult life, and he's held those values. So I don't know where he's going to stand on the tariff thing. Some people say it's just a hard negotiating tool to get what he wants with the NAFTA deal. So we'll have to see.
I had to dust off my high school textbook or history book here. Actually, I went into Wikipedia, but I had to look up the last big tariff that the U.S. did. It was this, the Smoot-Hawley Act back in 1930, and it got blamed for a whole bunch of things, everything from deepening the economic depression to possibly enabling Adolf Hitler to gain power. This does not sound like a very smart move in terms of U.S. foreign policy. Is that why Republicans are opposed, or is there other reasons?
There's parts of problems. Some people have suggested since China has gone away from issuing these sanctions on North Korea, they've caught them dealing with North Korea, that this is part of the reason why he wanted to punish China in some particular way. It had to do with North Korea and China basically breaking those sanctions. The other aspect of this tariff thing is that people have to understand, you'll buy a car, it's going to affect consumers out here. The prices are going to go up. And so, we're on the verge of a major trade war if this does take place. But the market responded very negatively last week, and that was probably a knee-jerk reaction. Today the market's doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to say with Donald Trump. Some people have argued this is just part of his negotiating aspects. He pretty much throws out this major, major thing and then backs off of things that he's going to do and find some compromise down the road.
Now, Paul Ryan and the Republicans here are basically opposed to this. Can they do anything to stop it, or can the president just sign a piece of paper and say, hey, we're doing this?
Well, one of the reasons why Paul Ryan had to come out is because Wisconsin will be hurt by this. And Wisconsin helped carry Trump to the White House. And, Ryan does have the president's ear. But the president has been saying this, as you recall back in 2016, that this is what he was going to do on his campaign. He's talked about this consistently, about the unfair trade balance and so forth like this, and how manufacturing has basically left this country. And so when he does something like this, the rest of the country says, I can't believe he's actually carrying through on one of his campaign promises that he said he was going to do. Because, I don't think people actually took him very seriously on that. But right now in Congress, they're looking at, is there a way or any legislation to basically strip the president of the power to do this? So that's one thing that people are looking at right now, if they can try to stop him in a legislative manner from doing this, so we don't end up in a potential trade war that, tanks the economy, that some economists say this will definitely tank the economy.
You mentioned Paul Ryan and Wisconsin, that's going to be a problem for him in his home state. How about other states? How about other races? The Republicans, would they be hurt by this in other places?
I think the Republicans would be hurt by this because it's not something generally that the Republicans want. This is something that some of the Democrats and the unions want. So Republicans, this could definitely affect the midterms that are coming up if this happens, because people, again, you just gave basically middle class a good tax break that people are going to get money back, only to find out it's a shell game, that when they go to the store, when they go buy a car, the price is going to be increased. So really, they didn't really make any money off of this tax break.
We're speaking with Tim Mayer from Talk Media News. We're talking about what's going on in Washington, and as usual, that's a lot. One thing that was supposed to happen today was DACA. DACA was supposed to end today under the Trump edict, but it didn't. What's going on now, and what happens to all the people who are in DACA?
Well, the courts, generally, most of the courts have basically said, giving extensions and keep filling out paperwork and so forth. So people are not being deported yet. But it looks like, congressional-wise, nothing has been accomplished. The president has given Congress, several months, 6 months to get something done. Nothing's been done. There's been no progress since 6 months ago in terms of that. There's been a couple ideas, a couple legislative ideas, but nothing has got to the president's desk because he's put a couple major restrictions on why he won't sign any bill first if it doesn't include, you know, funding for the wall and several other things. So it's a major holdup. But right now, people are not being deported because of it. Now, the president, you know, team has said they want to take this entire thing to the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court rules in favor of the White House, then the deportations can start.
The White House today was saying that Congress needs to act, Congress needs to do something, this is all on Congress. Is there any indication that anybody's going to do anything before this gets to the Supreme Court?
There's several politicians right now and several Congress people trying to present legislation. Both sides agree that, you know, these individuals should probably stay in the country, but the way the United States works, when they try to pass a bill or try to pass anything, they attach so many different things onto it, so it can't get passed. If they just put it up for a single vote here, the Republicans don't want to do that because that loses their power in terms of getting other things done. And that's the holdup right now, because if they just had this bill that said, let's keep these people here, let's, you know, grant them some type of, you know, citizenship road, I think both sides would generally agree with that. But the problem is they can't get a single bill just to say that out.
DACA was kind of in the background, as well as a lot of other political events last night at the Oscars. I watched most of the program last night. I don't know if you did, but it seemed to go along pretty smoothly, but it did seem to have a lot of political messaging with it. Did it strike you? Is that things kind of pulled off okay, or was it kind of shrill?
Well, actually, the Oscars have been doing that for years. I want to take you back to The Godfather in 1973, when Marlon Brando rejected the Oscar for Best Actor.
Right.
And he had a Native American Indian actress go up there and basically talk about Wounded Knee. And, you know, I think from that period on, it's always gotten to be political. And at some point, you know, there's been a lot of criticism on the right, saying, like, the Oscars shouldn't be that. Why should I, you know, I just want to have a moment of entertainment and not be something turned politicized. But the problem is when you have millions and millions of people tuning in, you know, my point is, what better you can make a message. You can take a message to people that are listening. And this is a golden opportunity for people to understand the plight of women and what they've gone through. And I thought, you know, it was appropriate at that time because Hollywood was under attack. If they did not address it in any way, they would have been heavily criticized for failing to address anything that had to do with Harvey Weinstein. So I thought, you know, in this aspect, it moves the discussion. And I think the people on the right want to say, hey, listen, I just don't want to listen to that. But I think it did move the discussion about the Me Too Time's Up and how corporate America should take note. Hollywood is trying to change. And basically, corporate America, should follow suit. I think that works a lot of ways. You know, let me just point out a couple things. Sometimes Congress can't get anything done, so typically like with the gun legislation, and sometimes it takes businesses, corporate America, to do something. And you saw that last week with all these companies saying they're not going to be selling these assault rifles and so forth. So businesses and corporate America starts to take a stand, and I think that happens, and that's the way real change happens. I mean, Congress can take a lesson from corporate America. So I didn't have a problem with the things getting very politicized at that particular time. So
what I thought was refreshing is the host, Jimmy Kimmel, actually encouraged people to use their acceptance speeches as a platform to advocate for issues. But then on the flip side said, hey, if you do a short speech, we'll give you a jet ski. I thought that was just really funny.
it was an interesting moment with it. And you know, if you're going to watch, you know, some of the problems I have sometimes with the actors, sometimes they're just not informed a lot about the issues. So you get a lot of people who are just really not informed and they're just becoming spokesperson. And so when you actually, as a professional journalist, you start to interview some of these people, you realize these people don't know what they're talking about. you know, their heart's in the right place, but they just don't know the issues. You know, in Hollywood, for this entire thing about Harvey Weinstein, they basically turned their back on this for decades and decades and decades. So, you know, they really got caught in a really bad situation. And, you know, it's about time some people have the courage to stand up. So I thought it was proper for them to do it. And I think America needed to see that. And I think there's a lot of cheering on. And, you know, the Time's Up's really started with Oprah.
Yeah.
So when she started pushing that hashtag Time's Up after her speech. So I think that was a nod to Oprah. And Oprah's, you know, gaining steam. Who knows where she's going to be in, you know, 2020.
Yeah. Hey, Time's Up. Time's up on us, unfortunately. I got to run here to the next break. But, Tim, it's been great talking to you today.
Thanks. Stay warm out there in Minnesota.
We will. Tim Mayer with Talk Media News, the executive editor over there. When we come back, I got a few notes here I want to share with you, including President Trump talking about President Trump for life. Yeah, that. That and more next on the Mike McEntee Show.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
So you know you need your carpet clean to keep your home healthy and smelling good. But don't use just a deal-of-the-day contractor you've never heard of that leaves your home smelling like a janitor's closet. Get spring cleaned with Zero Res and their Gotta Love It guarantee. This month, get three-room Zero Res clean starting at $129. Plus, this month you can still get a great deal when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Mike McEntee back here on AM 950. So much going on in Washington, D.C. that a couple of headlines that may have just slipped under the radar for you, or maybe you took the weekend off. This one over the weekend just struck me really badly, I guess, for lack of any other term. President Donald Trump saying he thinks it's great that China's president now holds that office for life. And then he muses that maybe the U.S. will do the same someday. Trump's remark came during a luncheon for Republican donors Saturday at his South Florida state, and CNN reported on the remarks based on a recording it obtained. Chinese President Xi Jinping recently consolidated power and was able to essentially get something that said, hey, he could be president for life. And Trump told the gathering he's now president for life, and he's great. I think it's great. Maybe we will give that a shot someday. Really? This man is harboring these thoughts, whether they are, you know, joking or not. It occurs to him that he might want to just be president forever. And remember, this is what Republicans feared from Obama. I don't remember how many right-wing newsletters and Facebook posts would proclaim that Obama would suspend the Constitution or take action to stay in office, that they should be vigilant as the elections approach because that was going to be the surprise. Remember, they also claimed that Obama was coming for your guns. Now, in the course of just 2 weeks, Donald Trump has said both of these things. I want to be president for life, and I'm coming for your guns. Where's the outrage on this? I'm not hearing the outrage from the right wing. Are you? And then here's the other story that this one happened today. And again, I think you should pay attention to this. Former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen he's the one who paid off the porn star, Stormy Daniels, who allegedly had a sexual encounter with Donald Trump. She's known, her real name is Stephanie Clifford. Well, apparently he wired money to a lawyer. But then after Donald Trump won, he was heard complaining to friends. This is according to the Wall Street Journal, that he had yet to be reimbursed for the payment to Stormy Daniels. And he had said last month that he had facilitated the payment using his own funds, and the deal was a private transaction. It didn't violate any laws. He said he wasn't reimbursed by the Trump campaign or the Trump organization, his former employer, but declined to answer questions about whether he was reimbursed by Mr. Trump or anybody else. If Donald Trump himself reimbursed this guy for paying off a porn star who allegedly had a sexual encounter with him, that's kind of a big story. And it's kind of not going anywhere with all the other news and all the other noise that's going on. But I thought I'd pass it along to you because you should know about that. Well, I tell you what, we are going to take another break here. But coming up next, we are going to talk about net neutrality. It is being challenged. A lot of people think it is in trouble, that it may be dead because Congress is supposed to do something. And of course, Congress hasn't done anything, and it's very unlikely that they might. So what are we to do? Well, Senator Latz has a solution for something that might happen here in Minnesota. That's all next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. The clock is ticking on net neutrality. In just a few months, the federal protections that gives everyone free and equal access to the internet could be gone. While there's slim hopes that Congress might do something, there's also a possibility that the state of Minnesota might be able to force internet providers to keep the playing field level. Joining us now is Senator Ron Latz to talk about his plan to save net neutrality at the state level. Hello, Senator Latz. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Got to ask you, this seems to be a federal thing, you know, net neutrality and federal communications commission. What can we do here on the state level to deal with this?
Well, we could do a couple of things. Our bill has two separate provisions. One, it provides that state and local government agencies would not be allowed to contract with local internet providers unless they agreed to enforce net neutrality principles in their own internet systems. We believe we've got full ability as a contracting entity, as a state, to make that a requirement of all of our contracts. So that would be step one. And then separately, we also straight out mandate net neutrality in Minnesota. There may be some argument that the federal government would make or providers would make that we don't have the authority to do that because that's a part of what the federal government regulates. But we think we've got the authority to do that, and we also think we've got the contracting authority to decide who we want to give taxpayer dollars to as part of our government contracts.
Now, the term net neutrality is something that's hard maybe for some people to visualize. What What would the impact of the loss of net neutrality in Minnesota look like?
Well, it would mean that download speeds for things that people are accessing on the internet could vary depending upon whether the website or the provider that they're trying to access has paid sufficient funds to the internet providers to have unimpeded or fast download speeds. So the provider themselves could charge more for, say, the fast lane, and they could not surcharge for the slow lane. And that means as a person is surfing the internet, they're going to have varying speeds depending on where they are surfing to. That's particularly troublesome because many businesses, including some very small businesses, home-based businesses, startups, they depend on internet access to access their customers. And they may not be in a position to pay extra for the faster downloads that the big players in the field would be able to pay. So that means small businesses are going to be at a very great competitive disadvantage.
Well,
so
small
it's problematic on two fronts, as a consumer and as small businesses.
Small businesses are one of the groups that all political groups like to attract and pay homage to, the Republicans as well as the Democrats. Are you getting support from Republicans on this idea just based upon that?
Well, we haven't really tested the waters yet across the legislative body. We'll have an opportunity to do that, I hope, if we get a hearing in our committees on it. I would expect we'll have bipartisan support for this. I think the whole concept is important, and I think there's a very strong grassroots support for this, which is going to be reflected in the legislative response to it.
Now, last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the Republicans have been standing in the way of gun bills, and I want to talk about that in just a minute or two. But are you concerned that the Republicans might be blocking legislation on this as well? And if so, where does this go first in the hearing thing? Because you only got a couple of weeks here to get a hearing on this before the legislature says we've missed our first deadline.
Yeah, you mean on the net neutrality bill?
Yeah, the net neutrality. I'll talk about guns in a minute, but net neutrality here.
Yeah. I'm concerned that we've got a lot to get done in a very short time, and it requires a lot of discussion for a topic like this. So I'm hopeful that we'll get a hearing. I think it would be a mistake for the majority not to give us a hearing on this, because I think the people understand net neutrality, and they definitely want to have it. So I think we'll be able to get it in, but we're moving pretty fast at the legislature, and there are a lot of items on the agenda. And it'll be an easy excuse for them to say that, well, we just didn't have time. Well, my view is we don't have time not to hear it. Because once you get into the system, once it's set up with the throttling up or throttling back of internet speeds for various providers, it's going to be harder to undo that. We need to move on it right now.
And we should mention that Representative Paul Thiessen is introducing the House version of this. So these are going to be apparently are very similar. We'll be moving along. We'll see what happens with them. But you have another piece of internet legislation that you are working on that actually got pretty far last year and then mysteriously was left out of the final bill. Can you tell us about that and where it is now?
Sure. It's the internet privacy provisions. Basically, we want to give the consumers the opportunity to say that the providers, their ISP, cannot collect personal data from them as to their internet use. Right now, there are no restrictions on that. So someone is accessing the internet from their home or from their business, and their ISP has the technical ability and the legal ability to collect information on their surfing habits, you know, websites they access, what they search for, those kind of things. And they can use that data however they want. They can sell it. They can use it for marketing. And I just think individuals ought to have the opportunity to say, nope, we're not going to allow that. I don't want my information to be shared with the world. And we did, in fact, have that passed last year in the Senate, almost unanimously, 66-1. In the House, it was unanimous. There was a bit of resistance behind the scenes from the ISPs themselves, and the provision got dropped from the final conference committee report. We're going to take another run at that. That's got like 90% public support. I'd be shocked if we can't get that through, because I think everyone in the legislature understands that the public wants it, and we should get it done.
Was that Senator Osmick who was the one lone vote against that? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, it was Senator Osmick voted against it on the Senate floor.
And
he has since indicated that he supports Internet privacy, but I guess the test will be when we get to the point of votes on the bill, and we'll see where people are at.
Okay. Now, the other bills that I was mentioning here, and these came up last week in the House, a version of these. These were the anti-gun violence bills, or bills aimed at reducing gun violence. And there was a pair of bills that finally got a hearing in the House last week and got tabled. You're working on similar legislation in the Senate. What was your reaction when you saw what happened in the House?
Well, I was of two minds on it. One is I was grateful that Representative Pinto, who is the chief House author on those bills, was able to find a mechanism to get a hearing on the bill, both bills. And I was gratified to hear the Republican members of the committee were had clearly read the bills and were asking some, or making some very analytical comments about it. So they were thinking about it. But they weren't able or willing to take the next step, which was to keep the bills moving forward in the committee process. So it's hard to tell if they were, just coming up with excuses for not passing the bill on, or if they were thinking hard and carefully about what we can do. I prefer to take the more optimistic viewpoint that they want to accomplish something, that both of these bills, again, have broad support, even among gun owners and NRA members. The background checks, which we've already crossed the threshold on. We have background checks already in place, federally and at the state. But we've got a couple of big gaps in the system. About 40% of gun sales happen without background checks. I don't know anyone who would want to get on an airplane when 40% of the passengers could opt to go around the screening system and get right on the plane. Well, that's how our gun background check system works right now. So we need to fill up those gaps, the online sales, the private party transactions, and the gun show loophole. And then the gun violence protective order, which would give law enforcement and families a chance to go to a court and get a temporary restraining order to prevent someone from possessing their weapons when they're in crisis, when they're in a significant risk of safety to themselves or others, and we can remove the guns from their possession. But we need to make these happen soon. None of the other, prohibitions we have in the law, violent felons can't possess it. People with significant mental health issues can't possess them. But you're not going to find those out if you don't have a screening system that everyone has to go through.
And then you've got another bill that you're working on that is something that a lot of people have been talking about and supporting, which is raising the age that somebody can go and buy an assault-style weapon or a semi-automatic weapon. I'm not sure how it's going to be defined, but raising that from 18 to 21. Where is that, and when will we get to hear more about that?
Well, that was on the bill introductions today. Again, we'll be asking the Senate Judiciary Committee to hear that bill along with the other two gun violence bills that I'm working on. If you want to purchase a pistol or a handgun, you have to be 21 in Minnesota. If you want to buy alcohol, you have to be 21. And a number of communities now are saying if you want to buy cigarettes, you have to be 21. But if you want to buy a semi-automatic assault-style weapon, you only have to be 18. And it's the most dangerous and lethal of all of those items. So I think it just makes sense that we raise that age to 21. I'm not talking about changing the 18 age for hunting rifles or other long guns. That's a different kind of a weapon, and they're typically not used in gun violence, person-to-person gun violence. The assault weapons clearly are, as are handguns for that matter.
This has taken so long for anything to happen. You know, people, we had mass shootings like this starting with Columbine and in schools. So this is not a new thing. But we haven't had anything really change here nationally, or at least in Minnesota. Why do you think those who oppose this, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, why do you think they're so hesitant to do anything? When you talk to them, what are the reasons they give you, the things that you need to overcome to get something like this passed? Is it the NRA, or is it that we're often told, or is it something else?
Well, I think it's the NRA and those who feel so strongly about what they claim is an absolute right to possess their guns, that it's a single issue for them, and they will absolutely turn out and vote against legislators that, you know, don't agree with them. In some legislative districts, or in particular in some caucuses for legislators, they're worried about that. And what we need to do, and what the children who survived the Parkland massacre have been showing us how to do, is change the political calculation for those legislators. They need to understand that it's riskier for them to do nothing than it is for them to take positive steps to prevent gun violence, in particular to try to restrict the access to guns for people who have violent criminal histories or documented mental illness. When people believe and understand that their constituents are going to make that a single issue to vote on, and that they're going to risk being voted out of office if they don't pass sensible gun violence reduction legislation, then they're going to vote with us on this.
I keep hearing this explained as it's a real rural versus urban split. Rural Minnesota is, you know, doesn't want any restrictions on guns, and that's where the Republicans have their base, so it should seem like Republicans shouldn't worry about this at all. Do you think that's really the case, that rural Minnesota is, you know, really dead set against making changes in this, or is it just that the people who want to make change just haven't gone to the polls?
You know, I think there's probably a bit more resistance in rural Minnesota than in the metro area, but our surveys show that across Minnesota, in the rural areas as well, there's a strong majority that support expanding the background checks to close the gaps and loopholes in that system. So I don't think it's necessarily that deep a divide. You know, in rural Minnesota, firearms deaths are mostly caused by suicide. And in family or in households where there are guns, the likelihood of a suicide attempt being successful is about 97%.
Yeah.
In family and households where there aren't any guns, where there are suicide attempts, it's usually, non-lethal methods, you know, razor blade or things like that. And it's just rare that it's successful. In rural Minnesota, the issue is suicide. In the metro area, it's more frequently it's violence, you know, against another person. But we all have a stake in keeping guns out of households where there's someone that is engaging in dangerous behavior, or has the past and has potential for doing that as a result in the future.
Well, Senator Latz, good luck to you and everybody else who's trying to get something done on this. I think there's 90% agreement in America that something has to be done. And, you know, a lot of the provisions that you've outlined here fall right within that target. So wrong choice of words there, I mean, for that, but fall within what people want to get done. And I certainly hope that something can happen this legislative session. Thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you have an uneventful drive home here through the snow.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Hey, folks, we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, phones, 952-946-6205. If there's something we've been talking about you want to talk about with me, we'll take the phone calls. And I've got some other things that we might want to talk about, which is guess how much money the State Department has spent to fight Russian meddling. Yeah, guesses you can start any moment here. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hi, it's Tom inviting you to the Blue State Ball VIP reception on Saturday, March 10th at the Blaisdell. VIP starts at 5:30, where you can meet and take selfies with me, Norman Goldman, and other AM 950 hosts. The reception is a hosted bar with Butler Past hors d'oeuvres, great music from Paul Metza, and signed book giveaways. Then stick around for general admission at 7. So come mingle with me, Norman Goldman, and other AM 950 hosts during the Blue State Ball VIP reception. VIP tickets are at am950radio.com. I'll see you at the Blue State Ball.
Guess who called me the other day? You did. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld of Computer Revolution in Roseville. I want to thank AM 950 listeners who called to thank us for supporting the station. So here's an offer exclusive to 950 listeners. Bring your broken computer or cell phone to our Roseville store, say I'm an AM 950 listener, and you'll receive $20 off any repair. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. And thanks.
Northeast Minneapolis is known for its creativity, and you'll know exactly why when you eat at Hazel's Northeast. Their creatively prepared comfort food will have you coming back week after week. Breakfasts like biscuits and gravy, granola pancakes, and brisket hash. For lunch, homemade soup and one of the best Reubens in town. And don't miss the daily risotto or Chef Ali's ever-changing dinner specials. Come on in, bring the whole family. Hazel's Northeast delivers real good food. Family owned at 29th and Johnson in Minneapolis.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
AM 950, it's Mike McEntee back here talking to you. We've got just a couple minutes and we got Norman Goldman right after the top of the hour with the news. So stick around for that. He's always interesting. Hey, Brett, I got to ask you this. If I gave you $120 million, not that I have $120 million, to fight Russian meddling, how much of that would you actually spend?
Quite a bit of it, considering what happened in 2016.
Yeah, that would be my general reaction to that, too. Well, the State Department was given, granted, $120 million, I think since late 2016, to counter foreign efforts to meddle in elections, you know, like Russia. Guess how much they have spent so far?
Well, if it's Trump, zero.
You are correct. Zero. Zero. I mean, what's going on here? This is the big thing. I mean, this is why poll after poll right now shows that it doesn't matter where your party affiliation is. People are worried that Donald Trump is not really doing much or anything to fight the Russian meddling. And again, he may have, you know, pull back the curtain. There may have been no collusion, just as he says. Okay, take him at his word at that. But you got to be worried here that, you know, A, we know they tried. You've got every intelligence group in the country saying this indeed happened. And they agree that they are going to try it again because, you know, it worked. They were able to sow, all sorts of discord here in this country because of this. So it's a great strategy. It doesn't cost that much. You got to buy some Facebook ads, you do a few things. So you would think that the government would say, the State Department especially would say, okay, we're going to take this and do something about it. But they're not. They're not. Zero is what they have spent. And the funding lag just really reflects a deep lack of confidence by, this is according to the Washington Post, a deep lack of confidence by Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in his department's ability to execute its historically wide-ranging mission and spend its money wisely. In other words, the issue of government is bad and therefore shouldn't do anything is getting in the way of government needs to do something to protect us. And the only thing the Trump administration thinks can protect us are more bombs and missiles and bullets and guns and planes. And we got to realize that, yeah, that's important. And, you know, the Russians have apparently come up with some nuclear missile that'll go through the water that could get here undetected. That's something we got to worry about. But I think the thing that we should be worrying about right now, day to day, and spending what amounts to chump change in government spending, $120 million, is figuring out how we can stop the Russians from meddling in the next election. There should be things that we should be able to do. But I can tell you one thing that won't stop them is spending zero. Spending zero and doing nothing does not solve the problem. I think we can all agree on that. And I think that's a good place to end today on something we all agree upon. We'll be back tomorrow, we being me and Brett, and hopefully you. And drive carefully. See you then.